So last week we've covered up to chapter 4, verse number 21. And what we have recapped so far is that in verse number 18, Krishna gave us the secret of action. That is to keep the mind attached to God and let their body and mind carry out all the action. That is what is called inaction in action. And then in verses 19 to 23, Krishna will tell us that we can take two type of lifestyles. Once we understand the secret of right action, we have a choice. We can take up sannyas, that is, we can go to ashram, renounce everything and take up sannyas. But we have also the option of remaining in the household, discharging our duties, provided we maintain the right attitude. So, for a householder, Krishna describes the actions in verses 19, 20, 22 and 23. 19, 20, 22 and 23 pertain to how a householder lives his life or her life. And only verse number 21 in between deals with the life of a sannyasi, one who has renounced everything. And we have covered up to verse number 21. So in today verses 22 and 23, we will look at what is the lifestyle of a householder. How does he or she live and how does he or she conduct himself or herself? So what are the qualities of a householder who has acquired or attained this knowledge? How to act as inaction in action? What are the qualities? Here the first quality he mentions in verse 22 is, in the very first line, yadrakshala basamtushto. So yadraksha means what is unsought. We may not want these things, but there are things we may get in life, some success in life, some promotion, maybe some wealth we may get in life, but it is unsought. Labha means what is obtained or acquired. Whatever you receive, whether it is a lot or whether it is little, what should be the attitude of the householder? He says here, santushta. Santushta means you must be satisfied with whatever you get. You do not, and whatever you get means through legitimate means, not through illegitimate means. So what is legitimately allowed by the scriptures, you work, whatever you get, whether it is little, whether it is a lot, whatever it is, without hankering for it, without complaining about it, you accept whatever you receive in life. So whatever is the outcome, you pray to Lord, O Lord, I leave it in your hands. And how can we prepare ourselves to mentally accept whatever comes? How can we prepare our mind? So what the scriptures say is that you must be very aware that whatever actions you are doing, you may be working very hard, you may put in a lot of effort, you may have planned everything very properly, but you have to understand one important point that the scriptures make, that our action is only one component of the outcome of the result. You are not totally dependent, it is not totally dependent on what your action is. Your action only plays one component. As I have discussed before, for example, if a doctor is operating, you may be the best experienced surgeon in the world, but you also have to depend on many factors. You have to depend on the equipment you are given, you have to depend on the operation theater, conditions of the operation theater, on your support staff, and even if all the components are perfect, even if every aspect of the operation is perfect, what is one thing that you cannot control? What is the one thing that you cannot control?
The outcome.
Yeah, why can't you control that one aspect of the outcome? What is it? the karmic effect of your past actions. So whatever there is to happen, it will happen. Whether the operation is a success or a failure can depend on not only your karmic effect but also on the patient's karmic effect. So we have to very clearly understand. Therefore, whatever I get is in accordance to the law of karma. It is perfect. You will never get more, you will never get less. Whatever you are supposed to get, you will get. So we have to understand this mentally and prepare ourselves for the outcome by being aware that we only play one role in our actions, in the outcome. So we have to accept the present and work for the future. Accept the present, work for the future. Present and past requires what? Present and past requires acceptance. Future requires what? Hard work. Hard work, isn't it? Present and past requires acceptance. Future requires hard work. What present, past and future don't require? What present, past and future don't require? Worry, worry, worry. Worry about the past, worry about the present, worry about the future. This is the message of the Gita. Very beautifully put in chapter 2, verse 47, which is the foundation verse of karma, of every action. Karma nevadikaraste. Your right is to do action. Ma paleshu kadachana. You have no control over the result of the action. Therefore, since you have no control, what do you do with the result? Surrender it to Lord. Surrender and accept everything as prasadam. So one quality is yadra chala basam tusto. Accept whatever comes, whatever you receive in your life. Without asking, the law of karma is perfect. Whatever you deserve, you will get. Second quality here mentioned in the second line, dvandva titaha. Dvandva is what we all go through from birth to death. Dvandva means pairs of opposites. Joy is there, grief is there. Profit is there, loss is there. Heat is there, cold is there. Pain is there, pleasure is there. So what is the definition of this world? What is this definition of samsara? What we call samsara? We are all what we call samsaris, right? This world is called samsara, ocean of birth and death. And we are all called samsaris who are going through this cycle of birth and death and birth and death. So what is the definition of this world now? What is the reason we are all here? In fact, the other day I went for a talk and Swamiji was saying, who is a samsari? How do you define a samsari? A samsari is one, according to him, is one who holds on to somebody's sari. That is a samsari. Because you are always hanging on to the world. That is a samsari. And going through the, what we call the ocean of birth and death. So we have to understand, what is the purpose of this world? Why have we taken birth in this world? What is the purpose?
To exhaust our karmas.
That means there will be sukha, there will be dukha. We cannot help it. There will be profit, there will be loss. There will be joy, there will be pain. So we have to understand that we cannot escape from this. We cannot escape from the pairs of opposites. But what can we do? What can we do? Since we cannot escape from the pairs of opposites, what can we do? So how do we accept that one quality that Krishna gave us in chapter 2, which I discussed last week also, titiksha, that is forbearance. You must have that, what we call that anchor. You have to make God your anchor. You know what is going to come. You cannot stop it. Whatever good, bad is going to come. Of course, good we don't mind, but bad is the one that affects us. So the only way is that we have to go through it. We need the support of the Lord. So what do you pray for? Pray for that support, that anchor. So dvandva tita means one who is dvandva tito is who is free, who has transcended the pairs of opposites. Meaning what? Not that the pairs of opposites don't come, they come, but such a person is not affected at all. Okay, you cannot stop the dualities from arising in your life. You have to observe all the dualities. And just like how we take, when do you take immunization from all the deadly diseases? When do you get immunized? Inoculation, when do we take?
As a child,
when we are born, isn't it? You don't take it at when you are 50, 60, 70 years old. So similarly, this devotion is our immunization against all the pairs of opposites. We need to cultivate this devotion as early as possible in life. So, prarabdha karma, you see, we must understand, today what we are going through, the experience, there are the three karmas which we have discussed before. One is the Sanchita karma, which is the warehouse of karmas. What we are going through now is called prarabdha karma. And what is the third karma? Agami karma, the new fresh karmas that you create in this life. So what we are going through is prarabdha karmas. Now assuming if it is in your prarabdha karma, then you will only have 100,000 ringgit in your bank. Now the minute you get 120,000 ringgit, what's going to happen? The minute suddenly from somewhere you make a profit of 20,000 ringgit. So you have 120,000 ringgit. Now what's going to happen? What does your prarabdha say? Your prarabdha says you only supposed to have 100,000 ringgit. But now you have 120,000 ringgit. What do you think is going to happen to that 20,000 ringgit? One way or the other, you will lose that money. Right? If you are supposed to have 200,000 ringgit, your prarabdha says even if you are not smart, but your prarabdha says you will get 200,000, from one way or the other, you will get 200,000. That means what? What does this tell us? What will happen is going to happen. So don't cry if you lose something, because what is that if you have lost? It is due to prarabdha. And don't get overly excited if you get something, because that also is due to your prarabdha karma. So accept. Accept the pairs of opposites, positive, negative, they will all come and go. Now, therefore titiksha is very important. That is one of the qualities we have to constantly develop. Be humble and thank God for everything that you receive. Okay? And what is the other quality we must also cultivate, which is one of the most difficult qualities to control here, given in the second line, vimatsara. Vimatsara is envy. We are continuously envious of other people's success, envious of what other people have, jealousy, always comparing with what others have. What is the difference between envy and pride? Envy and pride, what's the difference? What's the difference between envy and pride? Yeah, so what's the difference? One is related to what you have.
Neighbor's envy, owner's pride.
Huh? What?
Neighbor's envy, owner's pride.
Sorry, neighbor's envy,
owner's pride.
Owner's pride. What does that mean?
Whatever you have, somebody else will be envying that.
Neighbor's envy, owner's pride. The difference with envy and pride is, envy is when people have more than you, isn't it? Pride is you have more than others. So that's the difference. Envy is when people have more than you. You envy people who have more than you. Pride is when we look down on other people because we have more than them. So vimatsara is that jealousy. Can lead to envy, can lead to pride also. Both can lead to our spiritual downfall. Because why? We end up then doing actions inspired by wrong motives. When we are inspired by envy, when we are inspired by pride, then we end up doing wrong action. Just because he has something I don't have, I now work hard to make sure that I am better than him. So we have to be very careful. If we are driven by good motives, it's okay. But when we are driven by envy and pride, it's very dangerous. So there are six biggest sins which are given in our scriptures. You may have heard the six greatest evils, out of which vimatsara is one of the greatest evils. The others are kama, lust, krodha, anger, lobha, greed, mada, which is pride, and moha, delusion, and matsarya. So these are the six biggest evils which can create our spiritual downfall. So we have to free ourselves from this vimatsara and also along with the other evils also. Then the third line, if you look at it, another quality, sama, siddha, asiddha. There are three words there. Sama, siddha, asiddha. So what is siddha? Siddha is success. What is asiddha? Failure. Samaha means being equanimous in both success and failure. So again, if you look at it, the scriptures don't say don't work hard for success. We all have every right to set our goals. We want to study, you want to get MBA, you want to get PhD, you want to set up businesses, whatever you want to do, work for success. Work hard, work for success. Legitimately earn money, legitimately spend money. But what is the problem with success? Scriptures never say don't be successful. Be successful. But what is the problem with success? Don't be proud. Don't be proud. Don't be arrogant. It is not success that kills you. What kills you? It is the arrogance that kills you. Kills you not materially. You may be very materially successful, but it kills you spiritually. Arrogance and pride kill you. So, be equal-minded in success and failure. Because success will come, failure will come. And you have to cultivate humility. That is very important. Through success, you have to cultivate humility. And we have seen many examples in our scriptures we are given of those people who are very wealthy, very successful. You can identify with people like Duryodhan. He had the whole kingdom, everything he had, but still he had a lot of pride. He wanted to even finish off the Pandavas also. Another example is given in Ramayana of Ravan, right? Everything again he had. He had the whole kingdom of Lanka. He had all the riches, all the wealth. Yet one thing he didn't have, Sita. That caused his disturbance. Right? Arrogant, he went to battle with Lord Rama. And then you have people like Hiranyakashipu, etc., etc. And even in recent history also, you have many examples of people successful, but full of arrogance, full of pride, eventually led to their downfall. And especially recently I was reading about, you know, the RMS Titanic. The one who designed, the one who, drew up the whole plans for the Titanic, he created the ship, he launched the ship. On the day that he launched the ship, you know what is the statement he made? You know Titanic was one of the most luxurious, magnificent ships at that time. And on the day he launched the Titanic from this maiden voyage from, Southampton to New York, you know what is the one statement he made? What is the one statement he made? What is the remark he made? He said, this is a ship that even God cannot sink. He made that statement. He said, this is a ship that even God cannot sink. So arrogant, so proud he was of his achievement, that he said even God cannot sink the ship. And what happened to Titanic on his very maiden voyage? It got hit by an iceberg and it sank. Now the question is, not that God wanted to purposely teach him a lesson and make the Titanic sink, because 700 lives were lost. So what is it that brought him down? It is his own arrogance, his own ego. So work hard, be successful, but remain humble. Because understand, sama siddha, asiddha. There can be success, there can be failure. Remain equanimous in both success and failure. So what else? then what does he say here? He sums up by saying, Kritva api. Kritva means doing all actions, even while the householder, because the householder is one who has responsibilities, has many duties. So if you maintain this attitude, content with whatever you have, unsought, free from jealousy, free from pride, transcended all pairs of opposites, what is the result? Krishna says, Kritva api, even while doing all your actions, na nibadhyate, you are not bound. So as you face various situations in life, you have to ask yourself a question. Do you react or respond? What do you do? As you meet various situations in life, do you react or do you respond? So when you react, means what? What's the difference between the react and respond? Sorry? So reacting means there is no thinking involved, isn't it? You react straight away, that means there is no thinking involved. Respond is when you think and then respond. So it is very important here that when we understand the concept of action, we should always be responding, not reacting. Because every reaction without thinking will create another karmic effect, another karmic cycle. So here Krishna says, such a person who responds with proper thinking, such a person, kritva api na nibadhyate. The actions do not bind such a person. Actions do not become a burden. And the whole purpose of this is what Krishna is trying to explain, that our actions should not accumulate create new further or fresh karmas. Then only we break this cycle of what we call punyam and papam, and there is no further winter pools. So in verse number 23, now Krishna will finalize and describe about the householder jnani also. And again we must remember that the scriptures say physical renunciation is not a must. It is not a must that you have to physically renounce your house, your property, everything. But what is most important, inner detachment is a must. Whether you are staying in an ashram or whether you are staying in a house, what is most important is the inner detachment, not the outward physical detachment. So with regard to inner detachment, there is no choice. But regard to physical detachment, it is not necessary. So here now, Krishna uses the word gata sangasya, sangha. So sangha here means whose attachments are gone, and we must understand that it is not giving up physical possessions but mental attitude to what you possess. So what is the right mental attitude to cultivate? Because the householder has all possessions. He has money, cars, bank balance, house, everything he has. So I don't physically renounce. What is the mental attitude that I should cultivate against all whatever I have? What is that mental attitude? You are not supposed to physically renounce, so how should you mentally renounce? What do you mean by mental renunciation? Do not belong to us. That means all these things are what?
Once.
They are given by God to me, and who am I? I'm a caretaker. This, what am I? I'm a caretaker. Everything that I receive in life is due to the law of karma. It is due to the grace of God, and I am a caretaker. And who has the right to take it back? Only God can take it back. Through the law of karma, whatever you have, name, fame, possession, family, even this body also, we are just a caretaker. That means I have to learn how to use what I have been given for only one purpose, is how to spiritually enhance myself or become a better spiritual person. That means all these in my possessions, I have to understand how to use them to grow spiritually. They are all with me for a short time. Nothing is going to last forever. So it's just like you've been given a company car. The company gives you a car. It gives you a driver. Do you own the car? No. But you can use it as much as you want, for the interest of the company. And when you leave the job, what happens? You give back the car. And the driver also goes with you. So you have to understand that similarly in life also, when we come, whatever we are to get in life, car, house, whatever possessions, they are all belong to the God and they have been given to us. We are the caretaker to use them for our spiritual growth, not to get more and more possessions. So that attitude, the mental attitude must be there. And therefore Krishna also uses the word muktasya, the second word in the first line. Once you develop this this attitude of detachment, gata sangasya, then only the mind is free. What is your mind free of? Only when you cultivate this attitude of detachment to all your possessions, that you are only a caretaker, then only your mind is free of what? Free of tension, worry, anxiety, all these things come because of our attachment. This belongs to me, this is mine, this belongs to me. Nothing belongs to you. I have them, I use them, but I don't own them. That is the attitude of a jnani who is also a householder. So how do you develop this sense of detachment? And that Krishna says in the second line, jnana avasthita chetasa. Three words there. Jnana avasthita chetasa. Chetasa means whose mind is, avasthita means fixed. Fixed in what? In jnanam, in knowledge. So constantly we have to recall this knowledge, the purpose of our life, the purpose of this human life, the purpose of why we have been given all these possessions in our life is to grow spiritually, not to go and get attached to all these things. So knowledge has got to come. Using this knowledge that everything has come from God, everything belongs to God, and He can take away anything whenever He wants. So Krishna says, constantly focus on this knowledge. And in the third line he says, yat nyaya acharata karma. All the karmas, whatever karmas you perform, acharata, must be performed with the attitude of what? Yajna, sacrifice. If you remember, he already introduced this concept of sacrifice right in chapter 3. When he talked about yajna, he said what? This world has been created with the philosophy of yajna. So this whole, our whole human, in fact everything, nature also has been created with philosophy of yajna. Human beings also have been created to live in yajna. What is yajna? Yajna is living in sacrifice. Where we don't give away everything. What is the concept of sacrifice? What do you mean by concept of sacrifice? Whatever you receive, you partake that little bit and the balance you share. So everything that you receive in life, you have received through the grace of God. You partake, that's why Krishna said, you eat the remnants of sacrifice, whatever is little bit you consume, the balance you share. And as you share, what happens? The cycle of yajna continues. As you receive, you give, you will receive again. So Krishna said in chapter 3, one should not break this cycle of yajna. That is the whole purpose of human life. Receive, consume and share. As you share, you will receive back again. So Krishna says here the same thing again, yajnaya charata karma. All your karmas, all your actions must be performed with this attitude of yajna. That means what? When I perform the attitude of yajna, I must constantly keep in mind that awareness of God in all my actions. All my actions, whatever I receive, whatever I give, I can only experience the presence of God everywhere. So what happens? Your entire life becomes a worship. Entire life becomes a worship. And we think that when we give, we are actually losing. But we don't lose, because when we maintain the cycle of yajna, we will keep on giving, we will keep on receiving. Keep on giving, keep on receiving. So, in the next verse, in fact, Krishna will explain this. It's We have recited this verse 24 many times as a food prayer. But what is the significance of this? To understand the presence, whatever action we do, we must understand that the presence of God is in everything, whatever action that we do. So now, I forgot one more thing. The last line in verse 23. What will happen to the actions of a jnani? Samagram pravidiyate. Samagra means together with your results, the results of your action, praviliyate are all destroyed. See, every verse Krishna keeps on repeating that. Whatever actions we do with the right attitude, all the actions are destroyed. That means there is no more further accumulation of new karmas. So every verse from the last few verses he has been repeating the same thing, that all your actions do not accumulate new karmas. So what is that attitude that we should hold in our mind? That is explained to us beautifully in this verse here, verse number 24, which we often recite as a food prayer also. Okay. Now, we must understand that we go through this spiritual life in three steps. The first level is we must come to understand that the conscious principle, the difference between the conscious principle and this body which is matter. That is what I've explained before, the difference between electricity and the bulb. One is life conscious principle, one is just matter. Right? We have to understand that. And our understanding should be that I am the consciousness, not limited by this body. So what is the purpose of the body? The body is an instrument for me to transact with the world. It is an instrument given to me to transact with the world. Second thing is, I must understand that this consciousness in me is the same consciousness in that pervades throughout the whole world. We call it all-pervading consciousness. And in chapter 7, Krishna gives a beautiful example of a string on a, what we call on a string of pearls. So all the pearls, there are many pearls, but all are held together in place by that one string. Similarly, that one consciousness pervades everywhere, although there are multiple type of beings, there are humans, there are animals, insects, but there is one consciousness that pervades everywhere. And the third level is that this consciousness alone is satyam, whereas everything else is mithyam. Everything is subject to change. Only the consciousness will remain eternally. So now, understanding this, that there is that one consciousness that pervades through everywhere, through living and non-living things, keeping this attitude in our mind, whatever actions that we perform, we must realize the presence of God everywhere, in every action, in everything that we do. So now, here in this verse, he says here, Brahma Arpanam. You see, the word Brahma is repeated constantly throughout this verse, right? So Brahma Arpanam. Brahma Arpanam, Brahma Haver, Brahmaknav, Brahmana Hutam, Brahmeva Tena Gantavyam, Brahma Karma Samadhinam. Constantly repeated. Now, how do we keep this attitude of God also in our mind? The scriptures also give us two sadhanas that we must constantly, constantly engage in, the two very important sadhanas. The first sadhana is shravanam. We must constantly hear this religious knowledge. Shravanam means we must constantly expose our mind to this knowledge. Right? So, when we talk about shravanam, it is not only just hearing, but it is also our own reading of the scriptures to keep us reminders of this nature of consciousness. Now, what happens when we keep on hearing about Atma every time? Then only our internal thinking will change. Our love and devotion for God also will increase. That's why there's always kathas, you know, when they have many times in temples, they read, they tell stories about God. The reason is for us to increase our devotion, our love for God. So constantly hearing about God will bring us closer and be more closer devoted to God. So you'll be surprised that even in today's modern day management gurus, I'm sure you heard about Stephen Covey. In his own book here, he says that we have to learn to change our pattern of thinking. And one of the ways to change our pattern of thinking, he lists as listening to spiritual discourses. Listen consciously to all spiritual discourses, you'll find slowly your pattern of thinking also changes. And it is not surprising that in his book, he mentions 10 books that he says has helped him in his life to change his pattern of thinking. And out of the 10 books, 3 of them are Mahabharata, Upanishads and Bhagavad Gita. So even he cites that constant listening to this has helped him change his pattern of thinking also. You cannot underestimate the power of listening to scriptures. So, do you know who's present when scriptures are being discussed? Do you know who's present? Wherever scriptures are being discussed, like now also, do you know who's present?
Yeah.
Who's
present?
Who? God is present.
God is present, or Krishna is here.
But beside him, there's somebody else who's present. Do you know who's present when spiritual discourses are being said? Lord Yama, the God of death. So why is the God of death present here? Because when we die and his messengers come to take us to meet him and he sees you, you know what he says? Please let this fellow go. I've seen him in spiritual discourses. He's a good fellow. So it is not that by listening to spiritual discourses you avoid death. But what it means is it takes away our fear of death. It removes our fear of death when we have the love for God. Now, very simple example I give you. In our Hindu tradition, when there is arranged marriage, right? Very common to have arranged marriages in Hindu tradition, right? In arranged marriage, when the marriage ceremony is over, the bride will cry for two reasons. I don't know how many of you cried, but the bride will cry for two reasons. What is the reason the bride will cry? Huh? One is the attachment she has to her parents and the house. So the sadness is there because of the attachment that she has to leave that home, right? The love and the comfort of her parents. And the second reason?
Fear.
The uncertainty of where she is going. Because it's an arranged marriage. She doesn't know about the husband. She doesn't know about his character, about the house that she's going to. So for two reasons, you cry, right? Now, if it is a love marriage where she knows the husband, then what happens? That crying, although she's leaving, the crying is there, but it is not so intense, isn't it?
Yeah.
And where she is going, she doesn't cry. Why? Because she knows the husband. She knows where she is going. Now, apply the same thought to a devotee of Lord. If a devotee of Lord has love for the Lord, knows the Lord, has an intense relationship with the Lord, will there be any fear of death? What you are leaving, what you are being taken away from, there is no fear, right? And where you are going to the Lord, you are going to His house, do you have any fear? No, because you have already built up the intense devotion for the Lord. So similarly also, when we listen to discourses, we build up our love and our devotion for God. There is no fear when whatever we have to leave behind, there is no fear of where we are going also, right? So first is what we call Shravanam, right? Anchor the mind to God. The second is called Kirtanam, very important. Kirtanam, chanting the names of the Lord, a very powerful sadhana. And why is Kirtanam, the chanting, the more and more we chant, you become more and more devoted to God. The love for God also increases. When the love for God increases, all our negative qualities also go away. Raga, Bhaya, Krodha, all get diluted, right? And why especially chanting is a very powerful sadhana? that because in chanting it is very easy, you can do it anyway, you can do it anytime, you don't need any materials, right? Anybody can chant the mantra. So in fact in chapter 10 also Krishna will say, among all the yajnas, the most purest yajna, the most highest yajna, yajnanam japa yajnosmi, the highest yajna among all yajnas is japa yajna, chanting the name of God. It is the most easiest way for us to connect to God. While we are cooking, while we are driving, whatever we are doing, there is no restriction. Just chant the names of God. Right? So japa yajna is a very powerful tool given to us in Kali Yuga. Right? You don't need any materials, you can just do the chanting. So shravanam and what we call japa is very important for us to cultivate this love for God. So now when we come to this verse here, to try to understand this, what Krishna is describing here is a whole Havan Yajna. All of us have done in one time or the other this ceremony where we light a fire, we put in firewood, we offer ghee, we offer grains into the fire. We've all done this. So this verse is describing a Havan Yajna. And what does he say here? Brahma Arpanam. So what is Arpanam? Arpanam is the wooden, ladle that you use. That is called Arpanam. Okay? That wooden ladle where you put the ghee or you put the grains before you put it into the fire, that is called Arpanam. So that is Brahma Arpanam. What is Brahma Havir? Brahma Havir is the offering that you make into the fire, the grains or the ghee or whatever you offer, that is called Havir. And Brahma Aknav, you can easily understand, Aknav is Agni, that is the fire that is receiving all your offerings. And what is Brahmana Bhutam? Bhutam is the one who is doing the offering. So now look at the verse. In the ladle, when you are offering, who do you see the presence of? Brahma, God. So consciousness is also in the spoon that you are offering the what we call the Havan offerings. In the grains and the ghee that you offer also, whose presence do you see? Also the presence of Brahma. The fire that is receiving all your offerings, whose presence do you see? Also Brahma. The person who is offering everything into the fire, whose presence do you see? The consciousness also is within. That means in short, everything is nothing but Brahma. Brahma is Arpanam, Brahma is Havir, Brahma is Apnav, Brahmana is also Bhutam also. In all aspects, you see the presence of God. Just like a goldsmith sees the presence of gold in all ornaments. It can be a ring, it can be a bracelet, it can be a bangle, whatever shape, size, color, the goldsmith only understands that the essence of all the ornaments is nothing but gold. So there is only oneness of Brahma. There is only that oneness that pervades everywhere. So through all the acts of oblation, what is the goal? When we do all these various prayers, offerings, what is the goal? The verse says here, Brahmeva tena gantavyam. Gantavyam, the goal to be reached is what? What is that? Also Brahman. The goal also is Brahman. The offering is Brahman, the goal also is Brahman. You see the presence of Brahman everywhere. And therefore, Krishna says, such a person who can see the presence of God in every action, whatever action that you do, Brahma Karma Samadhina. He is totally absorbed. Samadhi means totally absorbed in his vision of God. Who has realized the presence of God in everything, everywhere. One who can experience the presence of God everywhere. Now, how does this become a food prayer? How does this verse, which we recite before we supposed to eat any food, we're supposed to recite this prayer, how does it become a food prayer? So, now let's look at it from a food prayer angle. What is Arpanam? Hand is Arpanam. That's food, right? That you are going to put So that becomes your hand, is your arpanam. What is havir? Food that you are going to consume. Right? What is agna? Agni, the digestive fire that is going to receive the food. And therefore, who is the one who is consuming the food also? That is yourself. All is nothing but God. So your hand see the presence of God, the food also see the presence of God, the digestive fire which is receiving the food also understand the presence of God, and you yourself also understand that you are the very consciousness also, that is a reflection of God. So the whole concept of eating itself, when we eat, we say this prayer, means we understand the awareness of God in our whole act of eating also. A simple act of eating also becomes a prayer also. So that's why this is used as a food prayer also. Now, from verses 25 to 34, from 25 to 32, here Krishna will give us different types of sadhanas. Now, there are many, many types of yajnas which are mentioned in the Vedas. But here Krishna is going to give us a sample of yajnas, how we can perform these yajnas and purify ourselves also. So, here Krishna will talk about japa as a yajna, dhanam, we give charity, that also is a yajna. There are many yajnas, but here Krishna will mention only a few. And what is very important to remember, that whatever yajna that we do, whatever sadhana that we do, we must always keep in mind the presence of God everywhere. That God is all pervading. The presence of God must be kept in mind. So, we must realize divinity in everything. Even the simple act of sweeping our house. How do we understand? How do we convert this into a yajna? The very simple act of sweeping our house. How do you convert that into a yajna also? You are sweeping the temple of God. The house is a temple of God. You are not just sweeping your house. You are sweeping the house which is a temple of God. So you see the presence of God everywhere. That even simple act of even sweeping can be turned into a yajna. Or cooking or whatever you want. So in fact there is one yajna all of us are doing without realizing you are doing it. One yajna all of us are doing. Eating, isn't it? Eating is a yajna. So even eating, if you eat with the right attitude, you know what in scriptures, what is eating called? The yajna, there is a name for it. When we eat, it's called Prana Agni Hotra Yajna. Because prana, there is air involved. Agni, there is digestive fire involved. That itself is called a yajna. It's called Prana Agni Hotra Yajna. Right? Because both fire and prana, air, is involved. And some people are very experts at performing this yajna more than 3 times a day also. Multiple times a day, we know. So now I'll give you a tip. Supposing you are having dinner and you don't want to be interrupted and a phone call comes. What do you tell your spouse? You say, tell them I am doing Prana Agni Hotra Yajna. Don't say you are eating. If you say you are eating, then they will say I have to disturb you. You say tell them I am doing Prana Agni Hotra Yajna. The fellow will get very scared. Must be doing something very fantastic. But don't try it on me if I call you. I know. So, at least you learn some valuable lessons in Gita. So, the attitude, the most important thing is every action can be converted into a prayer if we cultivate the right attitude. That is the whole concept of prayer. Right? So now, these other yajnas that Krishna will talk about here are all sadhanas that can lead us not directly to moksha, but these sadhanas that we do can help us purify the mind, which will lead us to knowledge, and knowledge will lead us to moksha. Now, supposing you say, I am not interested in knowledge, because ultimately the purpose of doing all these yajnas is to purify the mind to attain knowledge. But there are many people who might say, I am not interested in Jnana Yoga. Then what do you say to these people? Not everybody is interested in knowledge. Some people are happy performing rituals. So, what advice can you give these people? Better luck next verse. Isn't it? Better luck next verse. Because you have to eventually come to Jnana Yoga. So, you carry on doing rituals and prayers until you are ready for Jnana Yoga. Right? You cannot force people into Jnana Yoga. So, now here, let's look at the very first yajna that Krishna talks about. He gives two yajnas in verse number 25. Let us look at the first yajna in the third and fourth line. You see the third and fourth line? The third line and the fourth line. Brahmagnav apare yajnam yajninai vo pajuvati. Here, one yajna, this is the highest yajna now he's talking about. Now look at the words there. Brahma Agni. That is what we call the fire of Brahma. The one who offers his lower self into the higher self of Brahma. So now there are two selves. There is the lower self and there is the higher self. So one yajna is when we are able to destroy the ego. The lower self is the ego. So when we are talking about yajna, you always offer something. Let's say you offer grains and fire into, sorry, you offer grains into the fire. What is destroyed? Something is destroyed and something remains, right? Whatever yajna, the fire yajna that you do, you offer, something is offered, something is destroyed. When you offer, what is destroyed? All the firewood, all the grains are destroyed. What is left is the remnants. So similarly here, every yajna, you are offering something into something. One thing is destroyed, one thing remains. So here, the one yajna is offering the ego to the higher self, to dissolve the ego in the higher self. This is a very high form of yajna here that Krishna is talking about. Fire of Brahman means one who sees the unmanifest everywhere, who can realize the unmanifest everywhere. But the thing is, not everybody is ready for this, because we are talking about the highest yajna now. Here, to recognize the unmanifest pervading everywhere. So, the second yajna also is given to us in this verse number 25, in the first two lines. Daivam eva pare yajnam yogina paryupasate. Here, the word daiva means, instead of offering or you're meditating on the unmanifest, here you use an example, here you offer to who? Devas, that means manifest gods. So there are two types of yajnas here. One is manifest, the other is unmanifest. Unmanifest is a higher type of yajna, manifest is a lower type of yajna, which is more easier for all of us. So that means what? All the rituals, prayers that you are doing, you go to temples, you offer rituals and prayers to the devas in your house, it also is a yajna, provided you cultivate the right attitude. That you are offering everything to God, the offering itself is God, you are offering to God, even the offerer himself is nothing but God consciousness. So you realize the presence of God everywhere. So even in a simple example of just doing Deva Puja to whatever deity that you choose, but cultivate the right attitude also. So two yajnas here are given. One is Deva Yajna and one is Brahma Yajna, that is unmanifest. That's why in the nine, what we call, you must have heard, the Nava Vida Bhakti, the nine stages of bhakti that we all have to go through. The nine stages of bhakti starts with Sravanam, listening, right? You listen and then you develop that love and that, what we call the devotion to God. So the first level is listening. Then it's called Kirtanam, where you sing, right? We hear bhajans, we sing songs, we go and hear devotional songs. That is another level of devotion. Then you come to Smaranam. You must have heard about this, right? The nine levels of devotion. You start with Sravanam, listening. Then you come to Kirtanam, singing. Then you go to Smaranam, which is remembering, constantly remembering some form, some image of God, whoever you hold special to you. Then you have Pada Sevanam, when you surrender at the lotus feet of the Lord, you offer flowers, etc., Pada Sevanam. Then there is Archanam, where you go to temple and you worship with coconuts and banana and things like that. It's called Archanam. Then you have Vandanam. Vandanam is just basic prayer. Any prayer that you do is called Vandanam. Then you have Dasyam. Dasyam means where you become a servant. Your relationship with God is you are a servant of God. You are serving Him. So you do various seva, etc. as a servant of God. And then higher than that is when you consider God as your friend, Sakhyam. And the highest and most, the ninth and the highest level of devotion to God is called Atma Nivedanam. Now, Atma Nivedanam is complete surrender. That is the highest. Now, can you see what's the difference between the eight forms of devotion and the highest Atma Nivedanam? What is the difference? When we talk about Sravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, Padasevanam, all the eight levels of devotion, compared to this one which is called Atma Nivedanam, complete surrender. What is the difference? Can you see the difference? Correct. What is the difference? The Atma Nivedanam is advanced. The rest eight are primary level. What is the very significant difference between this eight and the one? So what is the difference when you talk about?
We are doing things. Eight
leads to the ninth one through. But what is the difference?
The last one is the fundamental.
Okay.
We are not doing physical.
Sorry? Okay, I'll tell you the difference. The difference is in the eight types of worship that you are doing, whether it is Sravanam, Kirtanam, there is always a consciousness that there are two, right? Because you are offering something, you are singing something, so there is God and there is you. When there is complete surrender, there is only one. That is what is called the highest level of bhakti. When you consider yourself, otherwise it's always I am offering flowers, I am singing bhajans, I have got this relationship with God as a friend or as a devotee. There is always two. But in complete surrender, there is only the oneness. So that is basically what he's talking about also in verse 25. When we offer to devas, there is always a concept that God is different and I am different. But when you come to the highest stage of unmanifest, that means everything is but one. Okay, so that is one type of, or two types of yajnas here mentioned. Then in verse 26 here, he mentions two more types of yajnas. He says, Srotra Dini Indriyani. Srotra means hearing, the faculty of hearing. When the scriptures talk about one organ, hearing, what they actually mean to say, it envelops all your organs of hearing, seeing, smelling, tasting, touching. Now, how does this also become a discipline? If you remember, earlier on in chapter 2 also, Krishna talked about the discipline of the senses. When we are able to discipline our five senses, it itself becomes a yajna, an offering to God. How does it become an offering to God? When you practice sense control. If you remember, in chapter 2, he talked about the tortoise who withdraws all the five limbs under the shell. So, what do the five limbs represent? The head, the tail, and the four legs represent the five senses and the mind also withdrawn under the shell. So, the shell means what you do is you withdraw, in this case, withdraw the senses. From where, okay, when does the tortoise withdraw the senses? When does he withdraw his limbs? When he senses danger. So similarly, we also must be aware where we are exposing our senses, what we are seeing. We must be constantly aware what we are hearing. Because if you are not careful, then you put more and more rubbish into your mind, as your senses are the gateway to the mind. So here, that also can be turned into a yajna. But it must not be by force. You must willingly understand that if I am able to discipline my senses, I will be able to purify my mind. So it is a willing control of your senses. It's a willing discipline of your senses. Just like when you all have come here, is it by force or willingly? So you have willingly come here to expose your ears to knowledge, to spiritual knowledge. Similarly, we use that kind of discipline to ensure that our senses are not exposed to the wrong things also. That itself becomes a discipline. There is no force. So willful discipline means applying your discrimination due to higher understanding. That's why the tortoise withdraws under the shell. The shell represents a higher understanding. By knowledge, I know that this is beneficial to me. I withdraw my senses wherever I see danger. So now what is offered and what is burnt away? Again, we use the concept of yajna. If you are practicing sense discipline, what is offered and burnt away? What is offered and what is gone? Just like I said, the fire, you offer something, that is burnt away, something remains. So how do we look at the same concept here? I am disciplining my senses. What am I offering? The disciplined senses. What disappears? What goes away or what do you eradicate? You eradicate the undisciplined senses. So every time you are able to discipline your senses, you eradicate the undisciplined senses. Step by step, slowly you are able to discipline all your senses. That itself becomes a yajna also. So that is one yajna. Second yajna mentioned here is in the third and fourth line, shabdadin visayan. Again, shabda means sound, which means all our organs of expression. Now, here the discipline is different. In the earlier part, you discipline your senses. So you are careful what you see, what you hear, what you taste. In this case of discipline is I enjoy everything. But, what is the but? In the first case, I stop myself, right? By my understanding, I stop myself from exposing my senses. In this discipline, I expose my senses, but what is the discipline? Huh? You are able to control. Example, if I like to drink 5 cups of coffee a day, after I drink the first cup of coffee, my tongue is asking for a second cup of coffee, what do? I am able to say, stop, I am not going to drink anymore. So that is a higher level of control. Where we expose our senses, but we are able to control them according to what we want. So here he says, shabdadin visayan anya. There is discipline at a higher level. You can enjoy whatever pleasures, but you know where to put the brake. You have mastery over the senses. So that is verse number 26. Now we come to verse number 27. In verse number 27 here, he talks about, if we look at the third line there, Atma Samyama. So Atma Samyama, there are two words here. Atma here refers to the mind. Now he's talking about an even more higher control. Atma here refers to the mind. What does the mind control? If you look at the first line of verse 27, Sarvani Indriya Karmani, you are able to use your mind to control all your senses. So all the organs of perception, the eyes, nose, etc., and all the organs of action, hands, legs, etc., is all controlled by your mind. Not only that, he says, if you look at the second line, Prana, what are the 5 pranas? The 5 pranas are those physiological functions that regulate all the activities of our body. Example, incoming breath, whatever we breathe in, whatever we breathe out, whatever food which is digested in our system, that digested food is carried to all the various organs of the body. And your body has got the capacity to expel all the waste products. They are all controlled by the five pranas. Prana, apana, samna, vyana, udana. Okay? If there is a breakdown in any of this one prana, your body suffers some kind of health problems. That's why when we do, when they do this, what you call Reiki healing, or they call pranic healing, they identify which of the five pranas is not functioning. Right? And they try to treat that prana. So here what Krishna is saying, when you have a firm discipline of the mind, with this mind you are able to control all your activities, your five senses including your hands, legs, etc. So you lead a totally disciplined life. Now when you lead a disciplined life, what is offered and what disappears? Again we look at the concept of yajna. What do you offer and what disappears? When you lead such a disciplined life, if you lead such a disciplined life where you control the food that you take, right? You control your water intake, there is what you call recreation, there's proper sleep, etc. What happens? The five pranas become healthy pranas. So what disappears? The unhealthy pranas disappear. Right? You maintain your body in good, healthy condition. That also becomes a yajna. How you discipline your mind and how you lead a disciplined life. Because even if whatever rituals, prayers, even we want to come for Gita classes, first, most important, how do we discipline ourselves? When we lead a disciplined life, then it is more easier for us to pursue a spiritual life also. So here Krishna says, leading a disciplined life also is a form of yajna, using your mind to control your body, control your senses, etc. Now I'll finish up the last, we don't have time for that. Okay, we'll come back next week and we'll complete the last verse number 28, 29, 30, up to verse number 30, Krishna will list all the yajnas, and then after that he will conclude about this path of knowledge also. So we'll come back next week to discuss verse number 28.